You are listening to The Point from MC3 in Lewistown, Pennsylvania. Check us out on the web at mc3church.org or find us on Facebook at mc3church. MC3, it's like nothing you'd expect. Well, good morning. Excuse me. Before we get started, I think it's important for me to mention that in our presence, we have a national champion. Last weekend, Colby Styler became the national champion in wrestling. And you can ask him all the details about that. But that is actually incredible and pretty cool. So we'll be getting him on the security team here in the next few months so that if there's any problems, he can take them down. Or at least score some points, I don't know. So if you have your sunglasses, you can certainly put them on. You know, what's the deal with these, aside from the fact that we have a really dark room and it's raining outside? Let's see, we sang a song about being beneath the waters. We sang a song about through the storm we are held. So next week we're going to sing all about sun and things like that. And then, of course, we'll be complaining because, like, it's so hot. But, you know, that's just life. But so sunglasses, I'm curious if you have them. Go ahead and turn the house lights on just to help this a little bit. So see there, isn't that better? Don't you feel much better now that you're wearing the sunglasses here? But I wanted you to look at your sunglasses. And perhaps it's written on the inside, or if you're, like, you forgot to take the sticker off. By the way, they're supposed to come off. You might have one right in the middle. You're like, oh, that's why I can't see there. But on that sticker, on the label, on whatever, do your sunglasses say, or do you know if they are polarized? So if you think your sunglasses are polarized, raise your hand. Just curious. There's nothing you have to do here. Just, all right, so, like, five of you, six of, okay, all right. And so the rest of you confirm that, yeah, so you have polarized sunglasses. So I wanted to tell you a story and tell you a little bit of something about polarization when it comes to sunglasses. And there's actually a thing, like if you're at, your high-end department store, it's not Bonton, but if you're going to buy some sunglasses somewhere, you know, they often have the sticker polarized. And you're like, what does that mean? You know, like it's cold and there's penguins. Santa's there? No. It actually has a purpose, and it's related to reflection, and we'll talk about that in a second, and glare. But it comes from this, let me tell you the story. I should tell you the story first. It reminded me of the story, or I reminded the story of polarization. But back in 2006, I led a missions team when I was in my previous church, a student missions team to Mexico, where we actually served with Kendra's grandparents in Constitución, which is a city on the Baja Peninsula, which is out, west coast side of Mexico. And on that team, there were some people. One of my leaders was a guy named Brian Van Stiok. And he did a great job serving, and he had just come with his recently wed wife, Emily. And one of my other leaders was a young Natalie Fetters Goss, who was also there. And let me just tell you about this. This is totally aside from the story, but we got there, and we had already been traveling for about 12 hours. And maybe it was a little bit more than that. I think maybe it was 18 hours at that point. And we got to the airport, and you had to land in Cabo San Lucas because that was the only place that could handle a plane to handle our 25 people on our team. It was big enough. And so then we had to have an eight-hour drive through the Mexico desert. That was before even its cell phone. Like, even today, I don't think they have cell signal out there. But back then, we didn't have cell phones, especially not international plan. And you'd be driving along, and, like, the road is just gone because, you know, water ran down through and some rain at one point and just the roads eroded. And, you know, if you guys remember, like, the very first Superman movie where the, you know, back in the 70s. And anyway, and so we had to rent four identical white Dodge Caravans. And we had to drive from this airport 8 hours after traveling for 12 or hours or more already to get to the place where we were. And, I mean, we had to go through a military checkpoint at one spot. There was a whole other fiasco where we lost our guide. We got separated at the airport, and so we had to just drive kind of blind. We knew that if we went north, if we went too far to the east, the east, we would be in the Gulf of California. If we went too far to the west, we'd be in the Pacific Ocean. But anyway, all I have to say is that this was a crazy drive, and we had all these people. We were exhausted, and it was me, my father-in-law, Kendra's dad drove, Brian drove, and young Natalie Goss drove one of the vans. And dude, she was a trooper. It was awesome. So I was really proud of her. And now Natalie, of course, is the administrative assistant here and is doing a wonderful job. But anyway, that's not even my story. So what I want to tell you is when we were in Mexico, we went one day. We had a free afternoon. So we drove to what we thought was the Pacific Ocean. It actually wasn't, because the Pacific Ocean was even further and you can't get there because there was a military point thing. But anyway, we went to this place that was essentially an inlet of the Pacific Ocean, because we all were like, hey, we have a day off. Let's enjoy it and go swimming in the Pacific, because, you know, here we are in the East Coast and the Pacific is kind of a big deal. And so we went out there and we found this little inlet and we were able to go swimming, and it was kind of cool. And at one point, and I don't remember the exact details of what was lost, because I don't remember these things. But at one point, Brian Van Syok, again, he was one of the elders here at MC3. If you're new, he was our prime group coordinator for a while. They have now moved out to Kansas, because you do. And but at one point, he lost something in the water, in the ocean. And we, you know, and I think it was his keys. I could be wrong, but I think it was his keys. And if anybody remembers that story, I believe a young Amber Snook was a part of that team at that time as well. But anyway, he lost in Chris Harpster. Anyway, so all these people. Jason White, okay, people you might know from the past of MC3. But anyway, keys lost in the water. Okay, back on focus here. And we're trying to figure out, like, where did they fall in? Where were they? And we're looking, and all the water, just to be clear, the water was fairly clear. It wasn't, you know, like Jersey, the water. It was not kind of murky and, you know, northeast coast stuff like that. It was fairly clear water. However, you know, here we are. There's waves kind of rippling in, and trying to see where were these keys. Where was the thing? And Chris Harpster, who is Carla Cooper's brother and Cherie Miller's brother, put a little context there. Chris had some sunglasses, and he said, you know, we're trying to look. And he said, oh, my sunglasses are polarized. And he was actually able to find the keys. And we're like, what does that mean? How did you find the keys? He saw them in the water. Well, because polarization in sunglasses reduces glare. And so I have a little sample picture. I don't know how it looks on the big screen here. But if you look through the left side, that's what normal, you know, if you're looking into water, you would see the reflection of the sun. And so you can't see down into the water. But polarized lens, on the right side, see how you can see the rocks in the water? I don't know if you can see that, but you can, okay? You can see down into the water. And so while the rest of us without our polarized sunglasses are looking, and all we're seeing is the sun reflecting back in our face, Chris was able to look, and the reflections were gone. And he was able to see directly into the water and to see these keys and pull them out. And so polarization is this really cool thing that you think, well, that's not a big deal, but it actually does matter in life. And, you know, when you're using glasses, and if you want to know how the science works, here it is. Okay? So that's how it works. So if you have any questions, you can ask me about it later. But that is, in fact, the science of waves and polarization. But in layman's normal day, Sean terms, it's sort of like Venetian blinds. I don't know if they call them Venetian. I don't call them Venetian anymore, but blinds. And like the vertical blinds. And if you think about that, if you've ever seen vertical blinds, and I'm not talking when you roll them away, but when you turn a little knob, right, and they're open, the blinds are still there, correct? You with me so far? But you can see through what's out there, right? With me? Yes? But then, of course, if you turn them sideways, you can't see through. But if you've ever looked out of vertical blinds, if they're open and you can see, like, you can look out straight, but as you turn to the side, you can't see them. They block the side views. Are you tracking with me there? If you want to put your hands up to get an idea of what I'm talking about, you know, you look straight ahead and you're fine, but from the side, suddenly it's blocking things from your view. And that's the way polarization works, because it blocks the reflected waves that are coming from, you know, the angle of the sun and bouncing up, and it filters out those things so that you can see the things that are straight ahead. And I use the key words so you know where this is going now. It filters out some of the other things that become distractions that get in the way of what you really need to focus on. And this morning, Mother's Day, and this is not just a Mother's Day point, because You know, it's a point for everybody. But the point that I want you to get today, when it comes to this idea of filters and filtering things out of our lives, you know, of course, the pictures are about not having filters, but we are talking about what are the things we do need to filter. Last week, we talked about what do we filter out and allow into our thoughts, because there's things we shouldn't be thinking about. And this week, here's the point that I want you to get, and that is this. With no filter, our circumstances can make us forget that God is in control. And see, what happens with this polarized sunglass thing is that, you know, all of a sudden we're trying to focus on what really matters. We're trying to focus on God, but we can't, because our circumstances are like light reflecting off. They're reflecting into our face, and we can't see, and all of a sudden we're like, whoa, everything must be about the light and the waves and the reflection, because we don't actually see what matters. And when our circumstances surround us, and we sang a number of songs about that already, our circumstances surround us, the troubles, the hard times, the annoying things, the sickness, the worries, the fears, all of these things, they start to close in. And in those moments, we're like, why, God? Where are you, God? And we forget about God. And I want to talk today about what we can do to essentially wear polarized lenses when it comes to our circumstances. Because when we allow these things to reflect, we miss what really is going on because of all the things that are going on around us. And I want you to know, I'll just say this, I mean, this is kind of what the point is about, but God is always in control, whether or not you feel like He is. And I need you to understand that. You need to get that. No matter where you are, no matter what you're going through, no matter your struggle, no matter the challenge, no matter the relationship issue, no matter the job situation, no matter the health thing, all of these circumstances can make things seem like, no, it's chaos. But I want you to know, whether you feel like it or not, doesn't change the fact that God is in control. So I want to look at a passage in Colossians. I think it's in Colossians, right? Yeah, that's where we are. In Colossians chapter 1. And Colossians was a letter that Paul wrote. He was a church planter. I've shared this with you guys before. He was a church planter, and he planted, one of the churches he planted was an area called Colossae. And in this area of Colossae, he wrote a letter after he planted the church, sent a letter back to them called Colossians. We call it Colossians today. That was a letter to this church in Colossae. And at the very beginning of this letter, he's explaining a few things. And I just want to read this to you, and then we'll kind of come back and break it down a little bit. Paul says, Christ is the visible image of the invisible God. He existed before anything was created and is supreme over all creation. For through him, God created everything in the heavenly realms and on earth. He made the things we can see and the things we can't see, such as thrones, kingdoms, rulers, and authorities in the unseen world. Everything was created through him and for him. He existed before anything else, and he holds all creation together. So, what I want to talk about is, how do we look past the reflections? How do we look past these things that are distracting us and making us lose focus? And maybe today, you know, I don't know where you are. Maybe you never even believed God was in control to begin with. And I want to maybe make a case for the fact that He is. But I think many of us, we know this up here, but when all the things start to surround us, we forget. And I could go into a whole message about Peter walking on water, you know, and he was focusing on Jesus. And everything was cool, and then the waves and the wind came up, and he forgot his place and started to sink. And I think a lot of the times that happens to us. In our circumstances, we're like, yeah, God's forgotten me. Or I don't count, or I don't fit in, or I'm not worth his time, or he's given up, or whatever. And we make these excuses, we basically get to this point where we feel like God is not in control. That God doesn't care, it doesn't matter. And so I want to talk about looking past the reflections. Because in order to see through into that water, the polarized glasses, getting rid of the extra distractions, getting rid of the reflections so you can focus on what matters. I want to get rid of these extra reflections, these things, so you can focus on the fact that God is in control. But I'm going to do it, and it's going to hurt a little bit. Because we need to understand a few things about who we are before we can start looking at who God is. And so the first thing I want to say, and this is obvious, but it might hurt you a little bit, and that is that Jesus is more important than you. He is. He's more important than you. He is more prominent. He is more incredible. He is more amazing. And if that bothers you a little bit, good. Like, I guess. I get it. Wow, Jesus is more important than you. And that's what Paul says here in the very first part of the verse. In verse 17, or sorry, verse 15. Sorry. Yeah, it says 17 there. It shouldn't say 17. It says, Christ is the visible image of the invisible God. He existed before anything was created and is supreme over all creation. So first of all, he's the visible image of the invisible God. The idea of an image is something that, you know, we don't know as much about today because we don't use it in the same way. But in the Old Testament, the New Testament, Bible times, an image was often referring to an idol, frankly. It was referring to something that people worshipped and said, this represents this God. And so they worship a calf. You might see that in Exodus. And that represented the God that brought them out of slavery. You would see Dagon was a wolf head creature, dog thing, that represented this God for the one of the other foreign nations. And so the image, and even when you look in Genesis, if you know the story of our creation, how we have been created in the image of God, and a lot of people are like, that means we think well, and we look pretty, and we can create. But it actually means that we represent God, and that's what an image is. And so here it's saying that Jesus is the image, the visible image of the invisible God. Christ is the visible image of the invisible God. He existed before anything was created, and we'll get to that in a little bit, and is supreme over all creation. And depending on the translation, it might actually say he is the firstborn over all creation. And for us, firstborn means like, okay, well, he was born first. How did that work? What's that? But the actual concept to a person in that era, when they understand firstborn, they were the ones that had all the rights. And they were the ones that received the biggest share of the inheritance. And they received the family honor and the name. And the firstborn was the one that was, there was nothing about them personally that was better, but just being the firstborn meant they were more important than the rest of the family. And I hope you kind of understand that. It doesn't matter as much to us today. But in this time, you know, say someone has 10 kids, the firstborn, they're the ones that are going to get the big portion of the inheritance. They're the ones that are going to get what's coming in because it goes to the firstborn. And so that person, just by nature of being firstborn, meant that they were better than other people in terms of not their character, but in terms of their position. And so the New Living Translation, which we're using this morning, they translate it, is supreme overall. And I think that's a great way to say it. But I just wanted to clarify why it says firstborn in some. It wasn't referring to the fact that Jesus, you know, was the firstborn person, and then there are other people who were born after him, but the fact that he was supreme. And the point being that Jesus is better than anything else. Jesus is greater than anything else. That he is the most important person, human, God, man, human, because he's both fully man, fully God. And he's better than anything else. And that means he's better than you. And he's greater than you. And he's more important than you. Okay, so before we sit back and start going, well, God, you don't care. God, you don't matter. What about me? What about me? What about me? I just want to put you in your place, put me in my place, and understand that, you know what? Jesus is more important than us. You know, whether we don't like that, whether we like that or don't, it doesn't change the fact that he is. So, before we start talking about ourselves and what about me? What about me? Where is Jesus in your sphere of order and priority? Because he is the most important thing. So, the second thing, just in case you're like, wow, Jesus is more important than me. But you're like, well, come on, God, I deserve more. I'm better. Why aren't you here? Why aren't you helping me through this? And that brings up the second thing, and that is that, okay, is that me or you? I don't know. I hope I didn't mess it up. And that is that Jesus created more than you. Again, this may be a no-brainer, but You didn't create. You maybe, if you want to say yes, I have children, then you could say that I created something. That's the best you can do. But Jesus, he created way more than you. So before you start talking about, oh well, I'm all my situation. I can't see everything's so horrible. God, where are you? My circumstances, God, you're not even here. You don't even care. Understand that Jesus is like, he's way more important than you, and he's created a whole lot more than you. And I'm just setting the case here for why he is incredible. And that's what Paul goes on then in verse 16. It says, "For through him God created everything." Through Jesus, God created everything. God created everything. And the word everything means everything. In the heavenly realms and on earth. And this heavenly realms word, it's not quite as super spiritual as we might want to make it. But God did create the invisible world. But also the idea that when people from earth looked up and they saw the heavens and the stars and the universe, everything you see on a clear night, God created that. And everything that we see on earth, Jesus was a part of that. It says he made the things we can see. And he made the things that we can't see, such as thrones, kingdoms, rulers, and authorities in the unseen world. And this whole idea that everything that is, Jesus created. Everything that is, Jesus created. And so, you know, when we start looking at ourselves and all the problems and all the struggles and all the things and kind of the me, 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 moo, 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 and I know this, I'm hurting our self-esteem a little bit, and that's okay. Understand that that Jesus created everything, so he's kind of a bigger deal than you are. He's a bigger deal than I am. And then that goes on, it says, everything was created through him and for him. So, Jesus is more important than you. Jesus created more than you. And just in case you weren't sure about this, Jesus was here before you. So again, before we get onto this, you know, pity party and this self thing, and we'll get to that, but understand that Jesus was here before you were. And before we think that we're the most important thing that God ever created, before we start getting overwhelmed by all the different things, understand that Jesus was here before you. And that's what the first part of verse 17 says. He existed before anything else. He was around. I mean, when you look in John chapter 1, it says, in the beginning was the Word, and that's referring to Jesus. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. And it goes on and talks about how Jesus was part of creation. So, and we did a whole series called 3. I can't see it. There's a logo up there. Back about a little over a year ago, where we talked about the Trinity and how does the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, how do they interact? How does that work? All one God and three distinct persons. So if you have questions about that, that series will raise more questions. But you know, just something to consider here. But the idea being that Jesus, as the Son of God, was a part of creation. He created everything, and he existed before anything else. So, before we go any further, sometimes our circumstances can overwhelm us. Sometimes these things can happen and these issues, and we're like, God, where are you? God, what's going on? God, do you even care? God, are you even there? Maybe we didn't even talk to God anymore because we're done. He's done with us, we're done with him. We get frustrated, we get overwhelmed, we get stressed out, we give up. Get tired, we quit, we run away because of these circumstances, because all these reflections that are reflecting back at us. But when we put on polarized glasses, we can see what really matters. And these extra reflections aren't the focus. Jesus is the focus. So the fact is that he is more important than you. He created more than you. He was here before you. And he's got you. And he's got you. This God, this one who is so much more important than you are, this God that created amazing, wonderful things, everything we experience around us, he created. And he was around before the creation of time itself. And this God has got you in his hands. He has got you in his control. And so no matter whether you feel like all the reflections are distracting you, put on the glasses because he's right there. He's right there holding on to you. He's right there through it all. And the fact that these other reflections with that, you know, the story of finding Brian's keys, the keys were there the whole time. Nothing changed about the keys. What changed was our ability to see it. And understand that in any situation you find yourself, any circumstance that you're in, the God of the universe, who is far more superior to you, has got you in his hands. He's holding on to you. And not just you as people, but you as a human being created in his image, as an individual, as a person by name. The Bible says that he has the hairs on your head numbered. He knows that much about you. God spends some less time with some of us than other people, but he's got you. And that's what verse 17, the second part of verse 17 says. And he holds all creation together. He holds it all together. It's all in his hands. The whole thing, the circumstances, the chaos, all of these things that feel like, oh, he's lost it, he's not here, he's gone, he's forgotten me. No, he is there. And he is holding all of this together. And so I want you to hear that. Moms, dads, kids, uncles, aunts, grandparents, wherever you find yourself, you probably fit one of those categories. No matter where things are, God's got you in his hands. He's holding it together. And let's talk here too. I mean, it's easy for us to be like, well, you know, it's these really big situations. Yeah, God's got that. But, you know, I have a big test next week in school. And yeah, God's got that. Well, you know, I've got this big thing, an interview coming up or something that I'm worried about with just a simple conversation. God's got that. And God has the big things too. God has the big issues in your life. He's got all of it. He holds all creation together. We just need to take the time to put the glasses on, to filter out these other things and those circumstances. And I am not saying that it's easy. Dude, I'm kind of getting tired of God teaching me when I teach you. It was a week that of just some different things going on and different situations, and I got frustrated, I got angry. I shared last week about my insecurities and how the church is going to fall down on me because someone's car broke down, and if you weren't here, you can listen to it online. But like, that was my week, and it was I'm out mowing the lawn Friday, and I'm still kind of worried about some of these different things and all the circumstances and all the issues. I mean, there's issues. You guys have issues. I have issues. We have issues together. And it just suddenly clicked to me. I'm like, oh, wait, that's what I'm teaching on Sunday. That you've got this. That even MC3 and all the relational issues and all the personal challenges And the desire for people to grow in Jesus, because that's my heart. Like, all this is fun. But it's all for that purpose, to grow in Jesus. And this is his church. And so he's got that even in his hands. And it was this weird, stupid, idiot, Sean, freeing moment where it's like, right, this applies to me too. So it's easy for the circumstances to come around us, but I just want you to understand that in the midst, even when it doesn't feel like it, even when you can't see what's in the water there. God's got it. He's holding you. He's holding it all together. So Jesus is more important than you, and that's a good thing, because if someone was less important than us and he says, hey, I've got you in his hands, you're like, oh, well, thanks, but no thanks. Like I think I shared with you, we were in a go to the next slide, please. We were in a sporting goods store, and there was a guy trying to sell us a piece of fitness equipment. And I'm just looking at that guy, going like, I don't think I trust your judgment, sir, because clearly you don't use this piece of equipment. And so it kind of affects things in terms of my like, you're telling me all the benefits of this piece of equipment, but you clearly don't use it yourself. So why would I want to buy that? So it's the same thing. If Jesus was like, yeah, I'm not any better than you, and he says, I've got you in your hands, you're like, hey, thanks, but no thanks. Certainly, he's created everything. He's created you. He's created everything about you. And he loves everything about you. We said that last week, and we sang a song about it this week. You know, you're God's child, and there's nothing that can change that. There's nothing you can do to make God love you more. There's nothing you can do to make God love you less. Nothing will change the fact that God loves you completely and totally. He was here before you, which is good. He's been around. And in all those things, he's got us. He's got you in his hand. So the point is, with no filter, our circumstances can make us forget that God is in control. all those reflections, all those things we miss. And then when we take the moment to filter, to put on the polarized glasses, the other distractions fade away. And we can see that all along He was there. There's an old hymn, "Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in His wonderful face, and the things of the earth will grow strangely dim in the light of His glory and grace." This idea that all these other things will disappear. And I'm not even going there, but in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 2, it says that if we fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, that all these other things disappear. That they're not the focus. We focus on Him. And that's for some other day. That's bonus. You can read that on your own for free. So I want to talk about some things that we need to filter out. And since I did this last week, I'm stuck because this is the way I am. But I want to talk about five focus factors to filter. Last week it was three thought things to filter. This is five focus factors to filter. And again, these aren't necessarily the most important five. These aren't necessarily things that you don't already know. But I think it's in the midst of our circumstances, it's good for us to maybe just have these reminders. Some of these things that we need to filter out. And what's interesting about these five things, and I say it's interesting because I put them together, but each one of these was some human being speaking and then God responding physically, verbally to these human beings. And I thought that's kind of cool because all of these, they're all throughout the Bible, and yet each one is God sharing something about Himself in the midst of the circumstances. So the first thing that we need to filter out, if we're going to recognize that God is in control, is get rid of our inability. Our inability. Well, I just can't do that. I just couldn't say that. I can't respond that way. I can't do the right thing. I can't say the right thing. I can't act the right way. I'm just not able to do that. That's not my personality. That's not my type. Whatever. And I'm just saying, stop. Stop with the excuses about who you are. Because we allow those excuses to shape us and then be like, well, because I can't do it, then God must not be with me. And then you forget, like, hello, you can. And I want to show this passage in Exodus chapter 4. And you're going to have a chance to really chew on these in your prime groups this week. We start our discussion guides again. And if you're not in a prime group, get in a group. I'm telling you. But the context here is Moses. And you guys might know the story of Moses and the burning bush if you ever saw the Ten Commandments or Prince of Egypt or Prince of, what was the other one called? Moses. Was it just called Moses? The one about with Christian Bale, Batman was fighting against. Anyway. But anyway, there's this point where Moses is out. He's, look it up later. He's out shepherding his sheep. He got kicked out of his land. He ran and fled because he killed somebody. And God basically is saying, Moses, you're the man that I'm going to send back to Egypt to deliver, to rescue my people from their slavery. And Exodus, Gods and Kings just came to me. There you go. And he says, you're going to be the one that's going to rescue them. And Moses, this bush is on fire, but it's not burning up, and Moses is there, and God says, I want you to do this, and Moses is like, whoa, I don't know about this, and God's like, yeah, you can, and oh, I don't know, and here in verse 10, as this dialogue is going back and forth between Moses and God speaking through this burning bush, it says, Moses pleaded with the Lord, oh Lord, I'm not very good with words, I never have been, and I'm not now. Even though you have spoken to me, I get tongue-tied and my words get tangled. And so Moses comes to God and says, God, look, I can't do this. This is not in me. This isn't who I am. You want to get someone that's a public speaker. I am not that guy. I'm the person that sits in the back. And you want me to go speak. No, I can't do that, God. I can't. It's just not who I am. And then it says, then the Lord asked Moses, who makes a person's mouth? Who decides whether people speak or do not speak, hear or do not hear, see or do not see? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will be with you as you speak, and I will instruct you what to say. And so here's Moses saying, God, this isn't my thing. It's not my spiritual gift. It's not in my personality profile. I did the disc, and you're looking for a C, and I'm an S, and I just can't do it, God. And God says, who made you? Who is in control of you? Who controls your ability to speak? It's me. So do it, because I'm with you. And that is something that I think we need to, sometimes we get that focus, we miss and say, I can't do this. And it distracts us from the fact that God is the one that created you. And if God is calling you to do something that is the right thing to do, no matter whether it's hard or not, do it. And He will give you the ability that you need. There's no question. But we can't let our excuses or our inabilities say, well, I can't do that. It's just not the way I am. The funny thing is we'll say things like, well, that's just not the way God made me. And God's like, oh yeah, you want to bet? But sometimes I think that becomes one of our excuses, one of our challenges, one of these things that's a reflection. We see this thing, they're like, oh, I can never do this. I'll never be able to get out of this. And God's like, no, you can. I'm with you. I've got you. I created you. And if it's something you need to do, if it's something you need to say that I've called you to say, called you to do, even if it's hard, do it, because I am with you. And I'm the one that created you anyway. And I will make this happen. So our inability is something that we need to filter out. Get away from this idea of I can't. And if God is telling you to do it, then do it and watch Him. Trust Him to get you through it. The second thing is our hurt. Our hurt. It is easy, and this is kind of all these things, I guess, are big challenges. But it's easy when we're hurting to completely miss what God's doing. Because hurt hurts. Like, if it felt good, it wouldn't bother us. I mean, think about it. And I'm sure if you talk to a doctor, you know, my insurance, you know, all these different insurance companies are always asking for the well patient visits. Why? Because nobody goes to the doctor when they're feeling fine. Even though it's important, even though there's importance for getting a physical and screenings and testings, those things are important, but nobody goes to the doctor when they're fine. Why? Because we're fine. But when we hurt, all of a sudden. And then you have sometimes doctors are like, okay, if you have a sore throat or if you have a little boo-boo on your elbow, don't bother us with that. Stay at home, put a Band-Aid on it, you know? But this idea is that hurt hurts. And so when we're hurting, we're always like, it hurts. And so we forget that God's there. And we lose focus. And here you've got in Job, the book of Job, and we're not going to read through all of Job. We're not going to read through all of this passage. As a matter of fact, could you go back one slide just for a second for me? In the beginning of Job, and I don't have time to get up, but there's basically Job loses everything that he had. Everything. And even his own personal health, he's not dead, but everything about his own physical health is horrendous. And so he goes through this horrible tragedy, this horrible pain, and his friends come around him. And these friends are such great friends, because they end up going into Job and saying, look, it's clearly because, and this is actually nothing that he did wrong, but it's clearly because God is judging you. Stop lying to us about your sin. Get right with God. You need to fix this. And for 36 chapters, Job's three friends basically convinced Job that you're like, wow, I guess you're right. I guess this hurt is my fault. I guess this is my issue. I guess I do need to change something here. And then in Job 38:1 through 41:34, which is in your prime group discussion guide, I would encourage you, unless you've got an extra 3 hours or so, probably not to read all of those verses. But beginning in verse 1 of chapter 38, God speaks up. God speaks to Job in the midst of this thing where all of his friends are kind of sharing, Job, it's your fault. You need to fix this. Your perspective on God is wrong. You've got it wrong. This is not the way it's supposed to be. God shows up and speaks to Job and the guys. And in verse 1 of chapter 38, it says, then the Lord answered Job from the whirlwind. Who is this that questions my wisdom with such ignorant words? Who do you guys think you are? And he says to Job, brace yourself like a man. Because I have some questions for you. If you're here to question what's going on because you're in the middle of a hurt and pain and think, oh, God isn't here, or this isn't the right thing, I've got some questions for you, and you need to answer them. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you know so much. So you understand how all this works, right, Job? I mean, your friends there, they seem to convince you that you seem to understand how I operate. You seem to understand how this works. So, you know, since you're so smart, how did this work when we created this whole earth thing? Tell me. Who determined its dimensions and stretched out the surveying line? Who decided how big it would be? What supports its foundations? Who laid its cornerstone as the morning stars sang together and all the angels shouted for joy? Tell me, Job. Since you're so smart, tell me, Job's friends. Since you seem to have me figured out, and through your hurt, it must be that God isn't in control, that I don't know what's going on, you need to realize that I do. And he goes on for verse after verse after verse, listing all the things. And it's actually a beautiful passage about all the incredible things that God has done. And Job kind of going, ooh, you're right. Who am I to question God? God knows the big story. God knows the big picture. And even through our pain, even through our hurt, God is still in control. And that's what God is saying to Job there. Look, you think you know, but you don't. I've got this. I've got you. I've got this situation. You know, and even for Job, you know, thousands of years later, it's considered to be one of the earliest books of the Bible written. Thousands of years later, people are able to take comfort from a guy that went through horrible things, and it said, he did not blame God. And so, when it comes to our hurt, we need to be careful. Because our hurt screams loudly. Our pain, it screams loudly. And those are the moments where we're like, can't hear God anymore because it's so loud. And it's important to filter that out. Just because we're hurting does not mean that God isn't in control. And there's a lot of questions there. Well, why would God allow this to happen? Why would God bring me through this? And I don't have time to get into that. There's multiple reasons that the Bible talks about. Some of them are for the sake of others. Some of it's to grow us, to change us, to help us learn something. Some of it's stuff we'll never even know because he's working something else out that you'll never even see or understand. But our hurt is sometimes a challenge. And let me help you understand this too. God understands hurt. He sent his son to this earth to die the, to this day, most excruciating form of corporal punishment ever invented. Capital punishment, that is, ever invented. And died on a cross for something he never did. He knows pain. He yelled from the cross. Jesus said, my God, why have you forsaken me? Because the Father had to turn his back on his Son because of the sin that he bore, of your sin and my sin that he bore. So he knows pain. So don't feel like God is just separate and he gets it. But it's easy in the midst of our hurt to forget that God's in control. The third focus factor to filter is our understanding. And this one technically isn't God speaking back. But it's easy sometimes for us to say, okay, I want, and personality probably does drive some of this. Like, I want to know everything. I want to know the whole story. I want to know the beginning, the middle, and the end. I want to know how the whole thing is going to turn out. I want to know how it's going to work. I want to have the plan. And sometimes that's not a good thing. Many times that's not a good thing. But I want to know. I want to know the story. I want to know how it all works. And in Romans chapter 11, there was a letter that Paul wrote to a church he planted in Rome. And this church in Rome had a lot of Jewish people that were following Jesus. And Jewish people, Jesus was Jewish. And that was sort of the religion. That's not the best way to put it. But the early forms of Christianity were just Jewish people. And Paul says that there are actually non-Jewish people called Gentiles that are now able to come to follow Jesus. And the Jews were kind of like, whoa, what? These are outsiders. These people were considered unclean. And so he spends most of chapter 11 explaining how God is allowing Gentile, non-Jewish people to come to faith in Jesus, to be saved from hell, which we talked about in our Burn series. And he ends the chapter with this thing where he says, it's almost like a song. a prayer, whatever you want to call it there. He says, oh, how great are God's riches and wisdom and knowledge. How impossible it is for us to understand his decisions and his ways. For who can know the Lord's thoughts? Do you know his thoughts? Do you know what he's thinking? Who knows enough to give him advice? Hey, God, look. Dude, totally. I would totally give God advice. And it would be awful. But I'm always like, hey, this is how I would work it out, God. If I were you, this is what I would do. Listen to me. I know. Because I was here before the creation of the earth. Okay. I was involved in creating. Okay. Well, I think I should know. And that's what Paul says. Who knows him enough to give him advice? Who has given him so much that he needs to pay it back? For everything comes from him and exists by his power and is intended for his glory. All glory to him forever. Amen. And the point is this. We can't understand God's thoughts. And that's a good thing. And it's hard for us. But sometimes our limited knowledge, we have no clue what's going to happen. And I am telling you, and I don't want to call out names here, but dude, just some of you sitting in this room, who would have imagined where you would be now just a year ago, just 2 years ago, of the stories that God has worked in your heart and worked in your life and the situations that brought you in and what's going on. And it's incredible. And if I had planned it out, it wouldn't have looked that way. Many of you wouldn't be here because I would never come up with a crazy way to bring people in to help them come to follow Jesus. Why? Because I'm not God. He has got a big picture. He understands things in a way that we never will. And in the midst of our circumstances, we need to trust that. And we need to say, just because I can't understand it. And listen, you may never understand it on this side of eternity. You may never get it. But who knows what God is doing? Who knows what God is bringing you through? Who knows that one comment that you made going through a hard time? You just said it in a good way, offhand comment at work. And one of your coworkers heard that. And it changed their perspective on things. And then 10 years down the road, they finally decide to go to church somewhere. And they become a follower of Jesus. And they decide to change some of the things they're doing. And then they, as they start to have their own kids and their kids, they really teach them about Jesus. And that person, that child grows up and eventually, I don't know, maybe that person's name becomes Billy Graham. And you would never know what God is doing. But that person that could bring thousands of people to follow Jesus. So get that. We don't get it. We don't understand it. We need to filter that out. That if you're trying to understand the situation, and I'm not saying you need to be an idiot. And she's like, this hurts and this is fun. Praise the Lord. No. But there's trust. There's faith. And there's faith in the fact that this God that we're trusting, this God that does have superior knowledge, this God did create everything. This God is more important than anything. This God was around before the foundations of this earth were laid. And so, you know what? We can trust him. He is worthy of our trust. But it's easy to allow these things to reflect back in our faces and we miss what's really going on. So we need to filter out our inability, filter out our hurt, filter out our understanding. And some of these kind of blur together a little bit. Fourth thing is filter out our worry. And I'm gonna make this distinction here, and just spoiler, we're gonna talk about fear in just a moment. And I'm differentiating worry and fear. I'm not a scientific sociology psychologist, but worry is, and let me make sure I say it the right way. Worry is about what might happen. Fear is fear about what is happening. And so I'm making a distinction there, and if you don't like that distinction and you want to put it all together, that's fine too. I don't really care. But the idea is that sometimes we are worried about the potential, and the potential is totally in our heads. It's totally non-existent. And we get all stressed out about things that aren't even real, but they're just perceived, and it totally affects our understanding of God and our view of our situations and our view of God's control over us. And in a couple more weeks, we're going to watch a video by Andy Stanley about this idea of and I think I mentioned this last week, this idea of when our expectations don't meet reality, what are we going to do? Are we going to assume the worst or do we believe the best? And that's the same idea, this worry about, well, what could have happened? What's going to happen? And worry is something that gets in the way of trusting God. It gets in the way of our perspective that God has us in our hands because all of a sudden all the things seem like too much and we miss the fact that God is in control. And so in Habakkuk, we did a whole series called Wounded, the big red cross, that was probably 3 years ago, maybe 4 years ago, and we went through the whole book of Habakkuk for a month. And the book of Habakkuk is basically this guy, who is a Jewish guy, complaining to God about some of the stuff that's going on in life. And we talked all about the hurt and the pain and the things that we struggle with. And in Habakkuk, he actually shares two complaints in the first couple chapters of the book. And the first one is basically, God, how long can I cry out and you don't hear me? God, where are you? God, there's some things going on here that you need to know about. And then God replies and says, No, I know what's going on, Habakkuk. And he says, I'm going to do something in your day that you're not even going to believe it if someone told you. And I feel like that's the story of MC3. Like, you would not even believe it if I told you this is what's going to happen. That these people would be sitting in these rows. That these people would be leading these ministries. Like, what? And then Habakkuk's like, okay. Because he says, God says, I'm going to bring in the Babylonians to take over Israel. And Habakkuk's like, well, wait a second. We're your chosen people. We're the Jewish people. We're the good guys. And now you're telling me that I'm complaining about why I can't see you, and you're saying you're bringing in the enemy? Do you know who they are, God? They are the Babylonians. They are bad. They have some issues. And he goes on this whole complaint, and then God responds to Habakkuk's second complaint. Which, by the way, this book is a great example, too, of, God's okay with us questioning him because he can handle it. And we say, God, I don't understand. He says, I know, but I do. But at the end of this kind of back and forth between Habakkuk and God, Habakkuk comes to this realization, just this moment of going, okay. And he ends this with this, well, this isn't the whole book, but the end of this chapter. He says, the Lord is in his holy temple. This is God's response. Let all the earth be silent before him. And this understanding of this back and forth between Habakkuk and God, they come to the point where, okay, you know what? Even if things look crazy, even if it doesn't make sense, even if this could happen, because the Babylonians are bad, God is still in control, so I'm just going to shut up and trust you. And God used Babylon to punish Israel for their sin. And we talked about that in our Word 3 series. And they were exiled to the land of Babylon. And then through 70 years of pain, the book of Daniel comes out of that. And then they end up coming back to the land under Nehemiah to rebuild the city walls. And that was what the wall series was a few months ago. And so this whole Babylonian thing, from Habakkuk's perspective, made no sense. But God had a bigger picture, and Habakkuk, they came to the point where, okay, you know what? God's still in control. He is in his temple, and I'm just going to trust him. But Habakkuk was worried about these potential things, like, God, you're not listening. God, this is going on. And it's easy for us to allow the worry to cloud our perspective. That's a reflection in life going, oh, I don't know, it might happen, this could happen. And we, Sean, I, maybe you don't do this, but I got this rabbit trail and it's like 652 steps away from reality, but I'm sure that that's what's going to happen. And sometimes I need to go, you know what? God's in his temple. God is on the throne. God is in control. God is there. He hasn't lost his control. He hasn't walked away. He hasn't forgotten. So we just need to sit back and trust him. So our inability, our hurt, our understanding, our worry, and then, as I said, our fears. And fears are more tangible, again, as I'm defining it. Fear is, this is actually a reality. This is happening. This isn't what I think might happen. This is happening right now. I am dealing with this right now. I am going through this problem right now. This situation is imminent. It is on me. This sickness, this pain, this injury, this relational failure, this job situation, these things are here now. And even fear is something that we have to say no. Even though it's real, we give it to God. And in Psalm Psalm 46, and I'll read the whole chapter here. This is a passage, as we get to the end, you might have heard it before, especially if you grew up in church. And I want you to know that it doesn't quite mean what it's been used to mean. It probably could have fit into the crop series about people taking it out of context. But this is the sons of Korah. I don't know who they are. I don't think Korah has any sons yet, as far as I know. Okay. So the sons of Korah wrote this psalm, and he says, God is our refuge and strength, always ready to help in times of trouble. Just listen as I read this. Listen as I read this, and maybe there's a situation that you're in, and you need to hear this right now. God is our refuge and strength, always ready to help in times of trouble. So we will not fear. And they go on to say, well, when earthquakes come and the mountains crumble into the sea, that's a big deal, God. Should I fear? No. Let the oceans roar and foam. Let the mountains tremble and the waters rage. Because there's a river that brings joy to the city of our God, the sacred home of the Most High. God dwells in that city and it cannot be destroyed. From the very break of day, God will protect it. The point here is, look, even when things look crazy for us and our world is literally in turmoil, if there is an actual earthquake, God is not shaken. God's home is not shaken. God's throne is not broken. It goes on and says, the nations are in chaos and their kingdoms crumble. God's voice thunders and the earth melts. God's got this. It goes on and says, the Lord of heaven's armies is here among us. The God of Israel is our fortress. Come, see the glorious works of the Lord. See how he brings destruction upon the world. He causes wars to end throughout the earth. He breaks the bow and snaps the spear. He burns the shields with fire. Even in the midst of war and chaos, God is still in control. Things are out of control. There's earthquakes. Things are awful. God, where are you? What's going on? Help, God, help. There's so many things I need to be afraid of. And he says, be still. And know that I am God. So the be still here, as we've often been taught, at least I was in church, is like, go be quiet. And that's kind of true. But in context, it was about all the chaos around. Just calm down and know that I am God. I will be honored by every nation. I will be honored throughout the world. The Lord of heaven's armies is here among us. The God of Israel is our fortress. So no matter what you're going through, no matter how awful it is, no matter how real the situation is, we can be still and know that he is God. And so when all these circumstances, when all these things pound on us, when all the things that we've got going on in our schedules and in our lives and the busyness and the craziness, and why does this kid not even eat? And why does the dog keep pooping in the house? Like, all of these things are big and little. And why did that cancer diagnosis come through now? Why does that person say they don't love me anymore? Why can't we just make this work? In all of it, big, little, major, minor, be still and know that he is God. Don't let your circumstances lose the fact that God has you in his hand. He's got you. He's got you and he's never going to let you go. Because with no filter, our circumstances can make us feel like God's not in control. Don't forget that. Doesn't mean it's easy. Doesn't mean everything's wonderful. Doesn't mean you're going to do it right every time. Doesn't mean you're going to do it right any time. But it does not change the fact that God has you in his hands. He holds all of creation together. And that includes you. Let's pray. Father, thank you so much that we are not alone. That even though there may be earthquakes and the oceans are raging around us, maybe there's challenges and things that don't make sense and we don't understand it all. And maybe we're dealing with pain and hurt and emotional agony and just all these different things going on in our lives that don't make sense and potential worries. And in all of that, you are in control. And I pray for each person here, God, that we would remember that. That we would rest in that. That we would come back to the fact that you've got us in your hands. And you're never going to let us go. And all these other things that become distractions, help us to filter them out so that we can see what's really in front of us. And cling to that. Grow us, change us, shape us by that truth that you've got us and you're more amazing and more incredible than we ever could be. And so help us to trust you, to rely on you, to follow you, to be obedient to you, to do what we need to do, knowing that you've got us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.